Hello and welcome to the Times Aerospace Weekly podcast for the Middle East and African aerospace and defence industries. I'm Alan Peaford. This week, we turn our attention to defence and hear from our defence editor, Alan Warnes, who has spotted the rarest of beasts, an air show, and he found people to talk to about the Middle East and Africa. And I sat him for 2 days on the Global Aerospace Summit virtual event from Abu Dhabi, and there was food for thought from that too. But it's been a busy news week, so first let's hear the headlines from Marcella Nethersole at the Times Aerospace News Desk.
Hello, and here is this week's aerospace news from across the Middle East and Africa. Exciting news from the UAE after it announced yesterday it will land an unmanned spacecraft on the moon in 2024. The announcement by Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum comes after the launch of a Mars probe earlier this year by the UAE. Sheikh Mohammed wrote on Twitter, "It will be an Emirati-made lunar rover that will land on the surface of the moon in 2024, in areas that have not been explored previously by human missions." He added that the rover will be named Rashid, the same name of his late father, Sheikh Rashid bin Saeed Al Maktoum. In new analysis released this week, the aviation sector details how it can meet its climate goal of cutting CO2 emissions in half by 2050 compared to 2005. It also highlights that net zero emissions from air transport across the globe could be achieved a decade or so afterwards. The plan will rely on significant shift away from fossil fuels, the introduction of radical new technology, and continued improvements in operations by the sector. There are now 20 airlines which have now committed to the net zero goals, including Royal Air Maroc, Etihad Airways, Royal Jordanian and Qatar Airways. Mango Airlines, South Africa's state-owned low-cost carrier's entire fleet is still grounded after South African Airways Technical, SAT, withdrew its maintenance services over non-repayment. Mango spokesperson Benediction Zubain said that critical discussions between the two sides are continuing and updates will be made available soon. But SAT said its customers should be able to pay for services rendered, and it was only pursuing its commercial interests. Sanad, a Mubadala company, has announced an over $272 million deal with Pratt & Whitney and International Aero Engines. The new agreement will see Sanad Aerotech providing IAE with expanded MRO services for its V2500 engines, which powers the Airbus A320 family of aircraft. Mansour Janhahi, Deputy Group CEO of Sanad, said, "We are signing this new agreement at a critical stage in the history of aviation. This agreement is another testament of Abu Dhabi's established position as a reliable global centre for the aerospace industry and its state-of-the-art engineering services." Saab delivered the second globalised swing roll surveillance system to the United Arab Emirates this week. This follows Saab's delivery of the first GlobalEye aircraft in April 2020 to the UAE, which has ordered 3 global aircraft. An order of 2 more is currently under negotiation. The initial contract was signed in late 2015. EPI, the Abu Dhabi-based precision engineering company, is expanding its manufacturing capabilities to support the Boeing 787 Dreamliner. EPI will machine aluminium trailing edge ribs for the use of the 787 commercial aircraft. The serial assembly lines will be an extension to the Abu Dhabi facility, with the proceeds parts additionally going through EPI's surface treatment plant launched last year. Rolls-Royce has completed testing of the groundbreaking technology that will power the world's fastest all-electric plane. The plane is part of a Rolls-Royce initiative called ACCEL, short for Accelerating the Electrification of Flight. UK Business and Industry Minister Nadeem Zahawi said, "The completion of the ground testing for the government-backed ACCEL project is not only a step towards an exciting world record attempt, but a leap towards developing all-electric and hybrid electric planes that could one day ferry large numbers of passengers around the world." And finally, if you don't get enough Etihad Airways news from our podcast, then you can hear the full details from the horse's mouth. The Abu Dhabi-based airline has released an official podcast, Altitudes by Etihad, to provide listeners with unique insights on how the airline has responded to the effects of COVID-19, while also taking a deep dive into some of 2020's most significant events. Amina Tahar of Etihad Aviation Group said, "This podcast not only brings our response to COVID-19 to life, but also addresses the various challenges and opportunities the aviation industry is facing as a result. In this open conversation, the group CEO, Tony Douglas, delves into things that went well, while also touching on some of the hurdles along the way." Well, that's all the news for this week, Alan. It's back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Ella. And you'll get the chance to hear the sound of Etihad a bit later in the programme as CEO Tony Douglas joins us from the Global Aerospace Summit. Well, when most of us have been bemoaning the fact that there are no shows to visit around the world, our defence editor, Alan Warnes, has managed to slip the bounds of COVID and actually been out to meet people and see aeroplanes. Alan, where in the world have you been?
Yes, Alan. I'm at NATO Air Days at Ostrava in the Eastern Czech Republic. It's probably the only major air show to take place in Europe. We had no general public, and usually it's around 200,000 people here, but this time, none. Just VIPs, media, and the aerospace companies. And it was great to see people with a real interest in Africa and the Middle East. I had a coffee with Michael Johansson, the CEO of Saab, since last October. The Swedish firm is preparing to deliver the second Global Eye aircraft to the UAE, which of course happened on Wednesday. I first met Michael almost a year ago at the Dubai Air Show, when to us in the media, there was an announcement out of the blue that UAE were keen to add to their free aircraft order for Global Eyes. I asked him if that was a big shock to him.
That didn't came as a surprise to us, of course. I think that we knew that they needed more capability.
Yes.
So exactly when it, I mean, these air shows in Dubai, and also the one in February, which is not sort of an air show, but the defense exhibition, are always sort of opportunities for them to announce important things. So,
of course.
So it was, I appreciate it, and of course we are encouraged by the fact that they want to go ahead with another sort of contract on number 4 and 5.
Okay. And what other presence do you have in the Middle East?
Well, in UAE, we have a company called Saab Limited, which is sort of a 100% owned company in the right economic zone, where we have started to develop capability within the sensor area, right, and to be able to support and take care of course, a bit of the surveillance system that we have now started to deliver to them,
right,
but also develop capability in the sensor area for other applications, maybe ground-based applications,
okay,
coastal type of sensor systems and stuff like that. So we're growing that steadily. So I guess we will approach now 40 engineers, both sort of mainly sort of locally employee engineers and some Saab engineers as well that have moved there.
Right.
So we have the facilities in what's the place?
Al-Alain. Oh, yeah. Because you've had a presence in the UAE with the S340s.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how it started in 2009.
Yeah.
So they acquired 2 Saab 340s back then, and they have been using them substantially. And
yes.
We've been supporting them all the time on that. So we have a team doing that as well in country all the time, doing support on that.
And they've learnt, their knowledge of the sensors and systems has evolved from working with the
I would say
Saab 340s.
Understanding the sort of force multiplier that the surveillance system like that will give them in situational awareness, not using the fighter capability for the wrong things.
Yes, that's right. Mm. Yes, because I remember 10 years ago there was the AWACS requirement. It went on for a long while in UAE, didn't it? And of course the Northrop Grumman's and the Boeing's thought they had it all sewn up. And then suddenly you came along 3 years ago, I think it was, and suddenly there was this announcement at Dubai in November.
2015.
Yeah. Mm. And it was, for me as a journalist, it was quite a shock to see you get that. And
because we've been working with them for a long time on that capability, and they are really skilled on as an end user on how to use a capability like that.
Yeah.
So they were actually very much a part of putting the requirements forward, of course, and how capability which was extended must look like, and in terms of multi-role. How is sort of the endurance in the air, what kind of platform you have to have if you want to use sort of a low footprint platform,
yes,
rather than a really biggish one.
And
how much you need to be able to communicate to the ground and to other platforms and all that,
right,
what you actually see, and how you work with information fusion. So they were really involved in designing the requirements around that.
And do you have other interests in the Middle East as well?
Well, we have another organization that is more like a program management offset interest company, as in offset meaning sort of initiating programs that would sort of fulfill offset requirements that right. everyone that makes business in the UAE in this okay. area needs to sort of fulfill. So they work mainly with that. So we have two companies. We have a Saab Middle East company in Abu Dhabi, and we have the Saab Limited, which is more focused on the engineering capability and new products.
And then we went on to chat to Jakub Hoda, Chief Sales Officer from the Czech Republic and engine manufacturer Aerovoda Hody, who built the L39 Albatross. The company was at NATO Air Day to celebrate the European certification of its new L39NG. And the Prime Minister, Andrej Babiš, even popped along to share a glass of champagne after the announcement. I spoke to Jakub during what was a typically noisy air show about Nigeria, a strong aero customer with the Albatross in Africa. And I asked him about the program to refit and upgrade the Nigerian Albatrosses and whether the NG could also be heading to Lagos in the short term.
Just disassembled the first three aircraft, so the whole overhaul should be finished in 14 months, and we hope to the next cooperation with the Nigerian Air Force in 2 years.
Oh, okay. And longer term, you're hoping for cooperation on the NG, I guess, as well.
Oh, that's correct. We hope that it partially, even because we upgrade the current L39 to the same avionic system, it would be much easier for the Nigerian Air Force to transition easily to the NG aircraft. So that's right. obviously in the pipeline. But besides that, we'd like to expand the cooperation, especially in the training. I mean, talking okay. to the Nigerian Air Force, there's a strong training requirement. So we're looking on the options to get involved into that as well and help the okay. customer to find the right solution for their training needs. Partially, they train already the pilots in the Czech Republic in yes. our in a technical training center in Pardubice, which is actually our partner in the NG yeah. as well. So we're looking on the options how to expand that, help the training center in Pardubice to get the right platform to continue the training. We're looking on some other options as well.
Right.
So we believe the demand of the Nigerian Air Force for pilot training is significant. And we don't just want to provide a platform, we want to look at the options, how we could help them to find the right training right. syllabi.
And the Nigerian Air Force, of course, quite operational air force as well. They're fighting a war in Nigeria. So you could actually see, and there's a lot of flying hours going on out there, so you could see a substantial order of NGs if you were lucky enough to win that contract.
That's correct. I mean, as you might know, the type certification we received yesterday for the training aircraft is just first steps, and we are going to continue with the light attack variant of the NG starting next year. And that's obviously the platform which we would be in discussion with the Nigerian Air Force with some significant air-to-ground and air-to-air capabilities.
Right. So, but they wouldn't want a training aircraft and a light attack aircraft?
I think both options are on the table for the future.
Well, thanks, Alan. That was Alan Warren's defence editor, enjoying the sounds and the smells of a traditional air show. Well, that one aerospace event that opted for the virtual format this week was the Global Aerospace Summit in Abu Dhabi. And I know Warnsey would have been engrossed by the keynote from the CEO of Edge, the UAE defence industry conglomerate, Faisal Al-Banai. We were able to ask about the recent agreements between the UAE and Israel and whether this could filter into shared defence activities.
And it's a major sign of the country's tolerance, a major sign of the country's future looking in this regard, and really uniting the region and really being able to deal with different conflicts that we have. So I think with that normalization and with that opening up in Israel, it's only natural that we will start discussing multiple sectors in that regard, from banking to general technology, to defense sector in that regard. And I think this marks another milestone of further cooperation that can take forward, leveraging the type of decision that leadership has taken.
Well, undoubtedly, defense matters were high on the agenda throughout the summit, with Lockheed Martin's president and chief executive officer, James Takelet, who reinforced that need for stepping up to meet the new threats that are particularly focused on the Middle East region.
The world's attention is understandably fixated on the COVID-19 pandemic, one of the worst crises we have experienced in a century. However, senior leaders in the Pentagon and around the world have emphasized in our discussions that the complex and volatile threat environment we faced prior to the pandemic remains. In fact, in many cases, the security threats have intensified since the outbreak of the virus. Many of our customers' adversaries have demonstrated their willingness to exploit the COVID crisis to test our resolve. Around the world, near-peer adversaries and regional powers have challenged territorial boundaries and taken aggressive action on a host of fronts. As this audience knows, the Gulf remains the most active theater for tactical ballistic missile and bomb-laden drone attacks, with those attacks targeting population centers, destroying critical infrastructure, and undermining global energy supplies. Such actions underscore the important role our industry plays in providing our customers with tools for defense and deterrence. In this dynamic threat environment, our military customers simply cannot afford to fall behind on their critical readiness and modernization programs. That is why they are asking Lockheed Martin to partner with them to push these vital programs forward despite the challenges presented by COVID-19.
These new technology threats really are something. Away from the summit, Kinetic released its Confidence in Chaos report this week, showing how that grey zone threat has increased. And we're hoping to get someone from Kinetic to talk to us about the latest findings sometime in the next week or so. One thing that has alarmed me, and this is the message for all of the governments and defence specialists listening, was that if we look at research and development, the global defence industry as a whole spent $25 billion on R&D. Amazon, the online marketplace, spent $22 billion on R&D, nearly 20 times more than any other defence company. And that's all in that Kinetic report. Well, I guess it does all seem a little bit bleak at times, but as ever, Tony Douglas, the Etihad CEO, in his inimitable laid-back style, can offer words of encouragement as he looks to his crystal ball to map out the future. And there is positivity, as he told the Global Aerospace Summit on its opening day.
What does the crystal ball tell us? Well, I have to say, I've lost confidence in my crystal ball of late because I can't seem to get away from the fog of the many challenges that we all face. But to be positive about this one, of course, it gets us back to growth in aviation. It will take time. To the positives in this one, it will get us back to the joy of aviation, but of course that will take time as well. But in terms of what that might bring to us, we believe that some form of wellness certification may well come into force. Why do we say that? Perhaps if we look at some of the parallels that have occurred over the last 30 years or more in aviation, in the security space as an example, we could probably draw post-Lockerbie, post-9/11, post-liquid bomb threat, that global standards ended up changing and harmonising. So obviously things like whole baggage screening not only changed, it then harmonised. Today, we all take it for granted. In terms of segregation between arrivals and departures, it's all adapted and harmonised. And ditto in terms of liquid and hand baggage. I can remember the days when you used to walk up to the steps of a commercial aircraft and be greeted with a warm handshake by the pilot. You could carry your own bags on board. And of course, there were no restrictions on liquids. But of course, that world changed as a result of the kind of examples that I've used. I don't see it fundamentally different to the way in which wellness could well be like an electronic visa, the means by which you're given right of passage. And it might not necessarily be whether you yourself have any unnecessary anxiety about your own health. It's everybody else you're sharing an aircraft with. And I think back to innovation and back to technology, it will make a big part of turning what is today's problem, adapting it into the future's normality.
And Tony had a message for all of the managers across the industry who are tuned into the Global Summit, that this year could have been a better experience than a year at business school.
I wish I was 30 years younger. I wish I was at the stage in my career where I could embrace an experience like this, not necessarily get consumed by the negative, use this as an experiential opportunity to hone your leadership skills, to sail smooth passage through one of the biggest storms that aviation's seen in recent history. The future will still be bright.
There was no doubt that the summit was a great success. And you can see more of the summaries on the website at www.aerospacesummit.com. And of course, there's plenty of other stories on our Times Aerospace websites for the Arabian and the African aerospace markets. So join us again next week when we aim to bring you a bit more upbeat information to get us going. Stay safe and thanks for listening. Goodbye.